love to call you back just as soon as I can. Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
Greetings. This is Automatically Deleted Husband. Lots of stuff. Because I want it on the table so it's there for my family one day when they have it, and hopefully it's useful. But first thing, the important thing, the absolute important thing, I have the image I'll use for today is from an article from the most reliable source right now for international news. Boomer leaves voicemail from Babylon Bee. And I put the text of it in the article because I saw it, I read it, I found it humorous, you know, because I do fit that boomer category as, you know, the part of the baby boom post-World War II. Well, that's me. But, you know, some of the words about the voicemail going unanswered and things of that nature, I thought it was humorous article. But anyway, I'll leave it. On occasion, I do listen to the Keeping the Promise video, which I did today, this morning, during my morning kefir. You know, I just thinking about that, I sent some kefir to my family. I wonder if they haven't. I'm skeptical anyway, because my kefir has been going on now for, years and years and years and years. And, you know, I don't buy anymore. I just make it in the corner of the kitchen. It's real easy. But anyway, one of the lines, again, it just amazes me because Eric Lee wrote that. I read it for her. I did the voiceover. But it was, and his words, filling your empty soul. And when I was listening to that this morning, it really struck me. Because the depth of joy that I've been getting lately on when I read the scripture, it's not just, but it's read and you study and, there's an insight. And what I sense is the Lord's love saying, here, I want you to see me even more. So I'm going to open your eyes to this, to that, and the other. And I just found that marvelous. A number of things happened. You know, I talked Friday about what's the name? Vovin and Lexus. And I gave it a lot of thought. And it's online. What I did is I have vovinlexus.shofarnexus.com. So it's online, it's real. And I shared it with a number of people via email, and a number of people watched the video. I put the two of them on, the one that got shut down and the one from, what's her name? U.S. Ambassador to UN, Nikki Haley, and South Carolina governor. Because, you know, I think she's a dangerous woman, but that's another issue. But, so, I put those online. I did have, I've had several views, and I've had one interaction, which was an encouragement. So, Sunday, I had some frustrations, and I said, okay, enough's enough. I put my shoes on, and did a normal thing, you know, I took my hike to Publix. And the way I went first to a bank machine. By going to the bank machine, I skipped my friend Miss Lillian's house. So I went to the bank machine, then went down Peerless to get to Publix. And just before Publix is a Russian church. They have two services on Sunday, one Russian, one English. And I've actually been to an event there many years ago. But walking by, and I said, okay, if there's people in the parking lot, I'm going to go talk with them. And as I was getting close, I saw in the distance people in the parking lot. But as I get close, I said it was only two cars. They were way up front, and apparently they were doing kind of a transfer from one stuff from one vehicle to another. And by the time I got there, they were driving out. So I have no idea if they were affiliated with the church or they simply there was a parking lot right handy. But I saw a vehicle there, and I thought, okay, maybe somebody's there. I went to Publix on the way back. I said, okay, I'm going to the door. And I went to the door. And it was locked, so the vehicle is probably just somebody who's parked. But, you know, and I've talked with my friend Chris, and we talked about it, and says, he said, maybe we should go on Sunday, simply because there is a concern that Russian people, just, you know, which we have a whole bunch here in Cleveland, Russian people may be feeling wrath. I'm skeptical that's true in North Carolina, or here in Cleveland, simply because it seems to be that kind of wrath comes to big cities, not to medium or smaller cities. Because it's like when I discuss with people about the black-white issue. There's a whole lot of tension in Chattanooga, a bigger city. Here, very little. Apparently it's there, but it's very little. Because I've talked with, you know, both black and white people, and they said, no, it's not like that here. Which is obviously encouraging. So I'm hoping it's true with the Russians. But I don't know. So, just real quick also, I did email the Volvin and Alexis. Because they have an email address. I sent them an email. Ask specifically for permission to make that more public, because right now I have a list of demo sites and it's not listed. So I told a few people, but I did not make it public. And I have not received a response. You know, they're not the first Russians I've emailed. And considering it's been so long, I'm wondering if I won't. So I'm going to basically move on from that particular thing. But either way, it was fascinating, but might continue trying to interact with the local Russian people. But the other thing that happened is I could have taken a slightly shorter path home, but instead I continued back down all the way to on Peerless in the hope of seeing Miss Lillian. And, you know, it really, I find this fascinating. You know, the ask and you shall receive kind of thing, but you have to ask rightly. And I really, it's the kind of thing I sense the Lord saying, yes, I want to use you to bless Miss Lillian. And I ask, can I go see her? And the way he said yes, and this is not the first time, was just phenomenal. Because often on Sunday, her son, one of her two sons, is there and do run errands and so, things of that nature. But as I cross what's 25th Street, and then she's just maybe 1,000 feet away, and I looked and I could see, okay, there's somebody backing out of the driveway. And I'm going to just barely make it. And I wonder if it's her son leaving or the two of them. I get to the driveway when they're almost on the way out. And it was kind of like, you talk about timing. They stopped. And it was emphatic from her son. Do you want me to leave? Because apparently he was going to take her to her brother's house to pick up some mail because he has some issues, and then do some other things. And he said, "Why don't I leave you here and you can talk with your friend, and then I'll come get you and we'll do the other things." She got out of the car. And we had a conversation for a half hour to an hour. You know, and again, you know, it's the ask. I asked the Lord for this, and the way he said yes is amazing. Because again, My objective here is to be obedient to Christ as seen in James 1:27, to visit orphans and widows. I don't dare visit orphans because of personal issues. Visiting widows, you know, a 92-year-old lady, not a problem. Because, you know, she's hard of hearing. So I don't visit by telling her stuff. I visit by listening because she doesn't hear much of what I say. But I invest in her. Because again, it's that characteristic she has. She's a human being created in the image of God. And you can see the joy of the interaction. And, you know, it's one of the things I have been trying to encourage other people. You can't go visit hundreds of people, you know, and be the person in front of a crowd. It's the one-on-one thing, and you can't do that to a lot of people. So you find or ask the Lord to place in front of you, because the way this whole thing happened with this lady, it's kind of like, I didn't seek it. I was just simply open to it. And the Lord said, plop, here it is. And I really think, I've been striving to encourage people, ask the Lord for those opportunities. And again, the thing about that, it's not that you're in front of a crowd, because in front of a crowd, it's just numbers. Individuals, it's that person. That, you know, you get to know them by name. I think that's vital. And I'm striving to encourage others besides living it myself. It's vital. It really is vital. But okay, so in the dialogue with Chris, we talked about, you know, the Russian church, and we talked about even Miss Lillian, and I celebrated with him, because probably as I'm recording this, he's having a date with his 9-year-old granddaughter. He now has 3 grandchildren, 3 girls. One is only less than 2 months old. And so he gets to go see them, and he finds it a great joy. I also have 3 grandkids. I've never seen one of them. So Chris again said, and I believe he means this. He said he would be honored to drive me to North Carolina to see my grandkids. So the postcard today went again to Julia with a request to see my grandkids. It's going to be scary. To do that would really be scary. Because I haven't dealt with any of my family in 10 years, except for, you know, the one interaction a few years ago with Julia, before she had kids to hold. Anyway. Okay, oh, so much. Over the weekend, I also, there's a group, and I have a lot of respect for them, because I think they do things extremely well, and a couple of times they have some holes that I think sometimes the holes are pretty big, because they're the kind of somewhat of this Hebrew roots type stuff. It's 119 Ministries. They're out of Florida, I think. And they have testeverything.net. And they do some, again, they do some really good stuff, because they do it really, you know, very, very artsy, craftsy, and so forth. However, again, I do think that they miss it, because they're, you know, like all of us, and I'm sure I am. And that's why I constantly try to engage others, because if I can't defend my position, then maybe my position is wrong. And because I don't want to, anyway, I'm not the authority. I want to know the authority, the Lord. But they're doing a four-part series, and they did part three on marriage. The first two were reasonable, I thought. Number three, I think they blew it badly. I mean, really badly. Because they were talking about divorce and remarriage. And their reasoning, they did a lot of things where they would throw out a verse but not apply it. This is exactly, you know, again, if you go to kozlowski.org/he begged us, I went into some depth in that because this is exactly what MetaView did on their human sexuality stuff. They read some stuff, including the Mark 10 and the 119 Ministries. They mentioned Mark 10. They simply read it and didn't apply it at all. Same thing. Yeah, I think it's exactly the same thing. They read the passage and then ignored it. But the one thing they also mentioned was Hosea. Because that's a really, really difficult book. And there are so many things in there that... But of course, Hosea was told by the Lord, go marry a whore and have kids. And it's kind of like, okay, you're telling him to do something that's in disobedience to your law. And had several hours of discussion on that over the weekend. But I think it was Saturday. I read, 14, 15 chapters? I read the whole thing. And it took a while because I didn't just casually read it. I looked at it and said, okay, this verse stands out. What does it really mean? There are things where it relates to other things. You know, it's things that I haven't known, because I haven't read Hosea in a while, except for maybe a verse or two. So reading the whole thing, found things, you know, like there is a reference, you know, as I was reading it, say, oh, what he's talking about is Genesis 32, the wrestling, Jacob wrestling with Christ. And there was some other passage or two like that where, okay, because I can see the references now where, you know, years, you know, decades ago, especially, you know, I had no idea. But so I'm grateful for that maturing. But then there was, what does it all mean and how does it apply? I think we have a reasonable answer on why he was told to marry a prostitute, but that's complicated. I won't go down that right now. But a verse stood out that doesn't really necessarily apply to that issue, but life in general. Hosea 12:6. So you, by the help of your God, return. Hold fast to love and justice, and wait continually for your God. Especially the last part, hold fast to love and justice and wait continually for your God. You know, it's the idea that I'm really been trying to focus on, not to seek revenge, but reconciliation. And I saw that here. Hold fast to love. Love, reconciliation. Yeah, that's an act of love. And then the wait continually for your God. There are, you know, I think it goes back to, you know, so many characters. It's you have to be in motion in order for you know, you don't just sit there and wait. It's you don't be the sluggard who's not even willing to put his you know, bring the spoon to his mouth, as we see in Proverbs and whatnot. No, we have to be active. But I think I need to figure out a good way to express this. We have to be active, but the Lord has to be the guiding one. In other words, we don't do be active for the purpose of being active, nor do we say, I'm going to be active in that direction because my arrogance is going to guide me. It's I'm going to be active, but an active tool that is guided by the Lord. I think that's important, and I'm trying to reason that through. So that was a real big encouragement, and I hope others in my family would be encouraged by that. But, you know, kind of on a related thing, I saw a short little report from Spain, Madrid. I didn't think about it until just this moment. You know, I've mentioned before, I've spent an hour in Spain, in Madrid. You know, I was only at the airport, but I was in Madrid, Spain. And there was a pro-life rally. A pro-life rally in Madrid. And the focus was both the unborn and euthanasia. So I found that fascinating because obviously, because of my history, I felt a kinship. I found that it was fascinating. But then let's go on to deception, because I have a concern for my kids as when they become adults, and I have a concern because of a number of things. Because as I try to explain, a collective will try to get you, and you've got to be part of that collective, and you can't go against that collective because your God is the collective. And there was a couple examples. I probably had a. There was an article I read today titled 95% of committee members advising on U.S. dietary guidelines has ties to big pharma and big food. I read the article. And I mean, it was no surprise because obviously I've been very much familiar with the revolving door with the pharmaceutical industry. People get a job, get into a management position within the pharmaceutical industry. They go into the government, to the regulating arm of the pharmaceutical industry, and then go back to the pharmaceutical industry and get paid really well if they do a good job. Because again, the point of government regulation has very little to do with protecting the populace. It's fundamentally, and I think you'll find this in basically every industry, fundamentally to make sure that the people who play in that particular field are only the big players. It keeps the little guys out, keeps competition away. You know, as David Rockefeller said, competition is a sin. No, it's not. But anyway, because the people who are in the big companies, and again, so often they're duopolies or polyopolies, where you have a limited number of large players, and you have that freedom of choice because you can get Coke or Pepsi. But again, nothing else. Everybody else is crushed. That used to be a drink too. I don't know if it's on the market anymore. Anyway, but you know, you can see that so easily. And one of the concerns is because I think about so many of the things I used to eat or do, and I don't anymore, purposely. And again, I will contend that. You know, I start looking at my face and I say, okay, that's a guy that's getting a little older. But again, I am probably healthier than the average American in their 20s. One, I'm not a couch potato. But the other thing is what I eat. Because again, refined sugar, you know, unless it's in a, like when I've occasionally... and very occasionally, would be out and having a meal with Chris, And perhaps the bread at Five Guys, it may have sugar in it. But I don't know. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But otherwise, you know, as I say, I basically do the ADED diet, you know, a dozen eggs a day. You know, and part of the reason I moved up from about 8 eggs a day to the dozen, I was losing too much weight. Anyway, so how do I encourage my kids, especially? Because their peers are going to die young. I think that's obvious. Their peers are going to die young. Yeah, they're going to die young. But I'm concerned about that. Kidding. I mentioned before the COVID-19 fiasco. Sudden change of subject. COVID-19 fiasco was built on fraud. As I pointed out a couple years ago, money, power, eugenics was the focus. You know, and individuals would pick one or the other. They didn't need to have all of it. Most people, I can make good money here. And then, of course, you form that collective of people who say, oh, yes, I wear the mask. And remember, I have one. Still haven't worn a mask. But you form that collective and you still instill into society, I need to be part of the group. And we're going to protect grandma by wearing a mask and getting the vaccine. And of course, that narrative is collapsing. The mask stuff is not as big of a deal because the vaccine is the killer. And the evidence is continuing to grow and mount. It's a killer, big time. It's genocide. But we focused. We moved the focus because as it's falling apart, you don't want that as the primary thing. So the focus shifted to Ukraine. And the same thing happened. We have to stand with your Ukrainian people because that evil dictator has invaded the country. You know, you have to add that punchline. Putin is a dictator. Assad is a dictator, and so many others. They're dictators because their population voted them into that position. Is there fraud? Oh yeah. Is it any worse than the U.S.? I don't think so. But putting the label of dictator kind of justifies your hate for them. And nobody knows. Probably a large percentage of people in the U.S. still can't find Ukraine on the map. But also very, very few know anything about the coup d'etat of 2014. They don't, you hear the words Russian annexation of Crimea. You don't hear that the people in Crimea voted on it and overwhelmingly said, no, we don't need part of Ukraine, we want to be part of Russia. So that's, if you call it, you know, because again, this is exactly what happened in the U.S. when the southern states separated from the Union. Same thing. It was done by their own volition. It wasn't the Russians coming in and taking over. Because most of the people in Crimea are Russian. And the Ukrainian government does not treat Russians well. This is obvious. You know, they outlawed the language. Can you imagine what it would be like if the U.S. outlawed Spanish? Think about that. If the U.S. government outlawed Spanish, you know, obviously the official language of the United States is English. The number of people who, you know, I have neighbors I have a neighbor and I will call him a good friend. We haven't had a complete sentence together, you know, because he doesn't speak basically a word of English. But I know one of the words that he uses to me. He calls me amigo, a friend. He's almost exactly my age, lives next door. I've talked with several other people there, try to find somebody who actually speaks English so I can get an interpreter, but that hasn't happened yet. He's offered me rides and whatnot. I consider him a friend. Consider what it would be like to outlaw Spanish. Put that as a mindset to understand what a whole lot of people in Ukraine, because a large percentage of people, probably a larger percentage of people, speak Russian in Ukraine than speak Spanish in the U.S. Do you think that would cause some tension? But then go the other step further. There has been a concerted effort by a number of people in order to control the government there. External influence by Hunter Biden and his dad. And the evidence is overwhelming. There is this infamous recording that goes back to like 2014 of Victoria Nuland, who's still very, very active in all of this. The EU, as it's known, the dialogue, I've listened to the recording, I have the text. It is this is our plan. This is the government we're going to impose in Ukraine, is effectively what it is. The influence there, the reason that what's his name? Zelensky became president is because he was nurtured into that position by a gentleman, primarily by a gentleman named Kolomoisky. You probably haven't heard of him in the news, have you? He's a billionaire, used to live in Ukraine, had to exit because he's has some issues, but he's a promoter, controller, and he was the one that, with his resources, got him into the position in the comedy program that he was in, because he was a comedy actor, played the role of president, and then shifted to the actual job of president. And again, this Kolomoisky was one of the drivers behind this big time. When you have, you know, $1 billion, you can have some influence. So we don't talk about that, do we? But what is the driving force behind that? Kolomoisky is a Jew. Zelensky is a Jew. And you think, oh, well, they wouldn't subscribe to Nazism, would they? The German influence of the Nazis in the previous Reich is rather strong. And the idea of killing your own people in order to gain position, there is a strong suggestion on this, especially if you read Herschel and some of the other things that occurred. Anyway, because again, as I point out, Christian Zionism is a non sequitur. You want to stay away from Zionism. Because Zionism and the idea of Zion in the Bible, it's a twist. Oh, is it a twist? But so you have those things happening where you have a man placed into the leadership position. And both of them have strong behind-the-scenes affiliation to the Nazis. And the more overt is, again, the Azov battalion. Not slightly overt, blatant, overt. And what I wonder, the lead up all this, what we see happening with COVID-19 and especially the vaccine, and we see that it's a killer. The vaccine is a killer. The evidence for this is coming out more and more. You have to be careful now, because if that becomes very known, and you have then this mass of people who said, wait a minute, I took the vaccine because you told me it was good. I am standing with Ukraine because you tell me the Russians are evil and they're doing foul things. You didn't tell me that the motivation is the Russians are trying to protect the Russians against the Nazis. It's World War II over again. No, you didn't tell me that. So what am I going to think when evidence starts to come out in a larger scale? And the floodgates opened. I don't think you'll see it in the U.S. news media, simply because it can't. You have to sequester this. You have to twist it. But it is the alternative media. There are a whole lot of people, independent journalists, who've gone to Ukraine and are reporting there and finding things. There's also the obvious, you know, the strongest one there would be RT, because obviously they're funded by the Russian government, and the Russian government's going to help get them there. So they're going to have better cameras and whatnot, but there are the independents also. And the independent journalists are showing a lot more consistency with RT than they are with CNN. I don't even know if they're there, except for maybe, you know, but with Zelensky. I don't think they go out to the other place. Al Jazeera is there, also big time. And one of the things you see happening, and I've seen some documentation on that, and Al Jazeera, is very guilty of this. They will show you, look at these destroyed tanks or these things, and they say they're Russian. But they're Ukrainian. So you can show a carcass of a tank or an airplane and whatnot, and most people say, oh, it looks like a carcass. Oh, you tell me it's Russian? Okay, it's Russian. So often, it's Ukrainian. And again, they do the idea, as I mentioned before, the Russian plan was to get rid of the military and then let the people escape. So a lot of the military will escape with the civilian population, and only the extreme ones would stay. Because the objective is not to. And of course, the extreme ones, the Azov battalion, understand if they get caught individually, they're probably going to get executed. Why would that be? Because again, there's more evidence coming. You know, you can see so much, especially in 2014, 2015, and the years up to now, where they would have their gatherings. They have their training facilities. They would train the young. It is identical to the Nazi training of the young in the 30s and 40s. Same thing. Same ideology. And literally the same documents. Literally the same documents, which I find fascinating. Well, you're finding... one example I found, and this one was an RT. Again, they have the better cameras and they can get places a little bit better than most of the independent journalists. But I've seen this validated by several independent journalists. There was again, in the Donbass region, Lugansk and Donetsk. These are the two places that have split off from Ukraine to declare themselves independent, sought help from Russia, and are now formally looking at unifying with Russia, exactly what Crimea did. Because they're Russians. If you go back a number of years, that was part of Russia. So what happened is the Azov Brigade, which is an official part of the Ukrainian military, has been in the Donbass region. They will use places, as I pointed out Friday, I think, they will use places to be prisons and torture facilities. And I saw that they went to one gentleman's house in Donbass, who is apparently well known by the people in the community. And they had a whole bunch of his personal stuff outside to show. And it's not just simply Nazi-related stuff. It is, some of the stuff does indeed date back to World War II. A lot of uniforms, hats, a lot of books and so forth, things that are literally from that era. And then, of course, the modern version of that. And one of the things they've done, and this is one of the problems with the everybody in the world has to become identified, the ID 2020 idea, because they've already been into that. And these people have voluntarily identified themselves in order to say, we're part of this group. Now they're part of the group, and especially in Donbass, where the Russians have basically taken virtually all of it back, they have to run. And see, one of the other things, if you run and it's kind of like, oh, I'm just trying to protect myself, you would simply run. If you want revenge, you would do things like leaving booby traps, setting up minefields. And they've done that in massive numbers. It's just like what's happening in, the U.S., especially in Vietnam, we left a whole lot of mines, a bunch of minefields. And we're now a whole lot of decades away from that. And mines are still found. And sometimes they cause injuries or death, even today. They have a large number of places of people who've been maimed by those mines, usually kids, because they're the ones who are going to go out playing a field. And it's in Armenia, same thing. There was a lot of efforts in Iraq, and I don't know how much was in Iraq, but in other places, Afghanistan, some, because especially, I don't know how the Russians have this equipment where they have these heavily armored vehicles, and it's kind of a like a big brush on the front of it, except it's not, not little, bristle kind of things, but big bang, 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 big, large rods that go and pound the ground. And they'll go over field back and forth, and whatnot. And because that thing is built like a tank, and you've seen how they use that, and they go through a field, and you see constantly landmines blowing up. That's how they clear. That's one of the ways they clear the fields. Sometimes they do it with the metal detector. Other times they simply drive this thing over a field, and you go bang, 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 blow them up. Landmines are cruel. We have a, I don't know if it's a UN or there's several organizations. Don't do landmines, because again, you're going to get people in future generations. It's revenge. It's cruel. The Azov Battalion is doing it in large numbers. I think they've already. I mean, it's not like dozens; it's thousands, and I think it's over 10,000 in the Donbass region alone. Landmines that have been found disarmed or blown up. That was not a minor bit of effort. And you wonder why they went to war. The other thing that I wonder if this might make some news, because this has been reported by several people, again, the independent journalists, where it, because there's the video of it. And where several of the Azov battalion captured some Russian troops and brutally tortured and executed them. I think they're all dead. It might not be true, but I think they're all dead, all the Russians, like six of them and whatnot. And apparently the video is horrendous. Why would somebody do that? Obviously, conscience being seared. But I think they know. If I you know, because of the fact you've been part of this Nazi regime. You know, it's one thing, there's the Ukrainian military, there's the normal stuff, and a whole lot of them. It's like that Snake Island thing that made such a big deal about that the Russians bombed it and killed everybody. And no, they all gave up. And the Russians, you know, took them, fed them, sent them home. They didn't take them prisoner. They sent them home. And, you know, the other thing I find fascinating is it's the nuclear power plant that was where they try to make a show by firing some from a training building. They fired some stuff, some RPG or whatever from there, and then the Russians fired back big time to stop this and to make the Russians look bad. But apparently, my understanding is that the people who are guarding that active nuclear power plant is the Russian and Ukrainian military, side by side. Because the objective here is, we both know, we have an accident here, we're both in trouble. So it's not, let's fight each other. No, let's defend this place and make sure no one else, because they have a common purpose. But that's, you know, but then again, the Azov battalion wouldn't do that. And that's why they had that incident. So in the same way, if someone has all the identification, that's why they have the Nazi tattoos. That's why when the checkpoints, what they look for on men are the Nazi tattoos. And if you have them, you'll be taken into custody. Because it's large numbers. As I pointed out, the one gentleman who said, yes, I'm glad they do this. A Ukrainian man. So if you're part of that and you have no conscience, you're going to seek revenge, like leaving the mines or torturing some prisoners that you may pick up of Russian soldiers. So all that, I would suggest, what may transpire is like the vaccine demonstrably shown to be a killer. Over time, we may find, especially with events like this, supporting the Ukrainian government, especially the Greek part that is supporting, you know, that outlaws Russians, that Russian language, that has the, you know, Azov battalion as part of the government, and so many things, and you see the cruelty of that. It's kind of like, okay, I don't want to get caught on the vaccine. I don't want to get caught on this. So what's going to have to happen? I need a new focus. So considering how fast this is coming, I don't think it'll be months. It may be fairly quickly, that something will happen in order to change the focus from Ukraine somewhere else. because this is going to collapse. You know, again, the documentation of an Anthony Sutton, who talks about Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution and the Wall Street and the rise of Hitler, shows how much, and you know, you can find so much. Again, Adolf Hitler, Man of the Year, Time Magazine. you can see how much there was so much support to the Third Reich, to the National Socialists, until they became a bad word. It'll happen again, in the sense that right now we have a strong affiliation worldwide with Ukraine. And suddenly, they'll be the ones that are the enemy. But because we've had so much promotion of them, how do you hide that? How do you get rid of that? As I pointed out, in the vaccine thing, there was the vaccine for the bird flu, the swine flu, the armpit flu, and whatnot. And it was the swine flu vaccine, I think it was, that killed more people than the flu did. So it was stopped fairly quickly. But it kept, you know, we kept doing it over and over again until we had, you know, we hit the home run, as I've described, with COVID-19. In a very similar way, all those evil people there were issues in Venezuela, in Iraq, in Iran, in Afghanistan, and so many places. We got caught, you know, the weapons of mass destruction from Iraq. Well, they didn't happen, so we have to move away from that. That was long ago. The Gulf of Tonkin, that was 50 years ago, so we don't talk about the fact that we lied to get us into war and kill millions of people. Now, we don't want to talk about that. We have to do the same again for Ukraine. How? I don't think it's going to be forgotten in that sense, because those issues will be real, but then there's the other side. We were so pushy. Sanctions. Sanctions are an act of war. And they backfire. And they're backfiring big time. You know, the U.S. tried for a long time to scuttle the Nord Stream 2 project, which is this second pipeline, because there's Nord Stream 1, which pumps natural gas from Russia into Germany. Now there's Nord Stream 2. And it would tie Germany even more into Russia, so the U.S. wanted to stop it, and they succeeded because they convinced, as he's euphemistically called, Sergeant Scholz, the current president, we're gonna cancel this. It's done. It's been active and ready to go for months. But they're not turning it on. And the problem is, just like in the U.S., the price of energy has skyrocketed. So what they've done, what the U.S. has done, what Europe has done, is said, stop this, or I'm going to put a gun to my head and shoot. That's exactly what they're doing. They're self-destructing. Europe is self-destructing in order to, for what purpose? And the U.S. will do the same, because sanctioning Russian gas, and they attempted to take them off the SWIFT system, which is the way payments are made, has backfired, because the back in the 70s, the reason Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states became a strong player is because the U.S. made an agreement with them. We'll defend you, but you do your fuel sales in U.S. dollars. By doing that, they made the U.S. dollar the effectively the world currency. So everyone is buying and selling in the U.S. dollar. Russia has announced, we will no longer sell you fuel, natural gas, and whatnot in U.S. dollars. You have to pay in rubles. That is going to collapse, in many ways, the U.S. control of the dollar, of the world economy. China and Saudi Arabia are in process of negotiation to exchange fuel in the Chinese yuan. India and Russia are in the process of switching over from their commercial exchange between Russian rubles to the Indian rupee. So, huge part of the control of the U.S. dollar is vanishing in a matter of weeks. The power of the U.S. is going to plummet. What's going to happen in the U.S.? What's going to happen, especially for the next generation? Because the next generation has no idea how to live without being dependent on the government. The government, you know, our U.S. government, we've surpassed $30 trillion of debt. Yeah, it'll never be paid back. It has to vanish. How does it vanish? The country has to collapse. My kids will probably see it. And I might too. How will it collapse? I don't know. But when you live on avarice, because that's the American way. I want. Give me. I deserve. I'm an American. I deserve this. If that's the way you live, you will collapse. You know, it's said that throughout history, there's typically an upheaval of roughly every 200 years. Who is the dominant player? And we've been the dominant player for like 250. It's time. Many have said that. And of course, there's this idea the Lord raised. You know, raises and takes down. I forget the wording. Kings, but I think it's Basileia, probably. I'll have to check that. Which is the ruler. And to say it's the guy with a crown on his head who's a monarch, no. It's the ruler, as in the government, the state. Because you'll see Basileia and Archon are frequently used fairly interchangeably. The Archon is a much broader term. It's very applicable to an Archon that is chosen by the people. Archon chosen by the people. Archon chosen by the Demos. Oh, it's a democracy, isn't it? Again, virtually those very words are in the Bible. What are my kids going to do? What is it going to be like for them? And what do I do to not make the mistake of Hezekiah and say, well, at least it'd be fine for me? What do I do as just one man, as a dad, as a husband, to say, I want to take the cost on me to be a blessing to my kids? What do I do? What I do is try to keep this under an hour, and I'm seconds away. Dorothy Jane, my lady, my wife, I love you and I love our kids, and I want you back.